Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Chrissy Mernon. October is National Fire Prevention Month. The week that contains October 9th is National Fire Prevention Week, which was established to commemorate the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. While the cause has never been determined, according to Wikipedia, legend has it Mrs. O'Leary's cow knocked over a lantern setting a barn on fire. Flames spread throughout the city, killing up to 300 people, destroying more than 17,000 structures, and burning more than 2,000 acres. 100,000 people were homeless after that fire. Fire safety is a mission of the San Antonio Fire Museum, operating in the San Antonio Fire Department's former Central Fire Headquarters, station number 1 at 801 East Houston, adjacent to the Alamo. We're going to the museum today.
Hi, my name is Hector Cardenas. I'm a retired city firefighter for the San Antonio Fire Department. I spent 34 years with the San Antonio Fire Department. I retired as an engineer in 2002 out of fire station number 19 was my last assignment. Speaking about the museum, the idea started probably about 20-something years ago. Several of us guys were involved in history, or we enjoy history, especially the fire history, and we started talking about the possibility of it happening. This was over at Fire Station 19. It was me, Micah T, Lee Zaleski, Steve Potter, And that was the original group, and we started back then thinking about it, and little by little it grew. We managed to obtain an apparatus from some gentleman in Houston, that's at 27 that's sitting right there, and started with a restoration of that. And it kind of took off from there. At that time, Fire Chief Bobby Ojeda was also interested in it, and he supported our committee. We formed a committee. We weren't a nonprofit or anything. We were kind of an in-house Fire Department Museum Committee is what it was called. And it all started there, and we just started collecting stuff. We got a whole collection of photos from Willie Hartman, who was a long-time retired historian for the Fire Department. So we kind of took over with archiving that. And then equipment was already stored downstairs at number one that Willie had started that years ago. In the basement, there was a bunch of stuff and records and nozzles and all kinds of ladders and things like that. So we kind of made sure that that stuff wasn't taken, because I know a lot of it had been lost through the years. So we had some guys watching, and we had everything locked up. And it took off from there. After my retirement, we became a 501c3, thanks to an attorney that was the next firefighter, too, who started that, and then we just grew from there. So now there's about, I guess, 40 of us involved in running and continuing to make this museum what it is, and trying to expand it and continuing to find stuff and let people come visit.
So what was the idea for the building when you were at Fire Station 19, which is on Vance Jackson near Interstate 10? Right. You were thinking, what would be a good place for a museum?
We were actually thinking of number sevens, because we knew that they were going to build a new number sevens. And The people in that neighborhood, because I had spent 19 years at number sevens, and they had been worried about what was going to happen to that building after we left and this and that. So we're the ones that started voicing the idea of turning that into a museum. And Bobby Ojeda, the fire chief at the time, said, sounds like a good idea. So that was the thinking back then. When we were actually in the building, doing some work on a couple of apparatuses, and it was Chief Hood, Charles Hood, who said, you know, we're getting ready to vacate or build a new station for number ones. I want number ones to be the museum. So we were kind of very, very surprised with what had happened, and we're actually glad, because not only is it fire station number one, but also the fire department shops and the basement, and hopefully maybe with a joint effort through fire education, we can do the dorm and the old fire prevention offices upstairs.
So you got this awesome building. It's huge, a lot bigger than number sevens, which is at Alamo and Cesar Chavez. And here this is right behind the Alamo.
We couldn't have picked for a better place. Not only is it a historic 1938 WPA building, but it was also Central Fire Headquarters. It's right behind the Alamo, where it's the most visited site in the state of Texas, and is now part of National Heritage, along with the mission. So we're really, really glad that we're here, and that this area is going to receive I guess, a big upgrade or redo. And so along with the Alamo, we'll enjoy some of those changes and that are coming to help us, you know, maintain the museum.
Did you and the other volunteers work at this fire station number ones when it was an active station?
The only time I ever worked here was I was detailed over here, and I really didn't enjoy it that much. But too many chiefs here and too much stuff. Most of my career I worked at a single company. Mm-hmm. So it was a little different, yeah, but I worked here, and it was quite different. We used to run two tiller trucks out of here and an engine. And of course, at that time it wasn't the fire chief, it was the assistant chief that ran for that shift.
And this station was decommissioned because as the apparatus got bigger?
Well, that and also our hazardous materials team was running out of here, and they just ran out of space. They got too many machines, too much stuff for storage and trailers and all kinds of stuff. So it made sense for them to build them a newer station down the street.
So that was real fortuitous for the museum committee, and now you have this big building. And what did it take to get it in the shape it is now?
It's taken a lot of elbow grease, a lot of people working, a lot of money that we've raised. I know just the air conditioning alone was over $100,000. You know, most of these bays at firehouses are not air conditioned. If you're going to have a museum, not only do you have to protect the artifacts, but you also have to make the people comfortable. So that was a big expense, the air conditioning, painting, the exhibits, the lighting, the ADA bathrooms, windows, doors, all kinds of stuff that we had to do. And it was quite an expense. I would say we have at least over $500,000 into just the building itself like I said, the AC and the electrical.
So it's all been done with donations and volunteers?
Every bit of it has been donations. We did get a $150,000 matching grant from the city, which was with the sale of old number 7s. Chief Hood asked for that amount, and it turned out they would grant it to us up to $150,000, and they gave us 18 months to match the $150,000, and we did it in 7 months.
And here we are at the museum. So when people come in, you're one of the docents, and most of the docents are retired firefighters, and you even have one from New York City.
Right. We have John Horgan, who's a retired New York City firefighter. He was a truckie in New York for many, many years. He's one of our senior docents here. He's a great guy. Has stories, great stories about New York. And, you know, we're the same. You know, firemen in New York, firemen here, we've same type of apparatus, same stories almost. So he fell in just perfect.
Mm-hmm. So when someone comes into the museum, like most museums and places, you walk through the gift shop and mm-hmm. you have lots of firefighting stuff, t-shirts, toys for kids.
Right. There's only one way in and one way out, so we got them either. They are emergency exits, but we ask them to leave from the same door they come in. So we catch them coming and catch them going. Mm-hmm. So we do carry a lot of fire department t-shirts and, like you said, toys and stuff for the children. And we do a good sales here. People really enjoy it. We get a lot of firefighters from all over the country. We get volunteer firefighters. We get fire buffs. And since we're right behind the Alamo and three hotels surround us, we get a lot of walk-in traffic from folks that are really interested, have never been to a fire museum and really enjoy it. Plus, with our hot weather, we're nice and air-conditioned, so a lot of folks just drop in to cool off, and then they find themselves really enthralled in some of the history that we have here.
Well, tell me about the history, because it is fascinating.
Well, let's talk a little bit about San Antonio and organized firefighting in San Antonio. It really didn't start till 1854. You know, this part of Texas was, by the 1850s, was pretty well populated by German immigrants and Czech immigrants and French, mainly Germans. So it was the Germans that really started our first volunteer firefighting company. It was a simple bucket brigade on the other side of the San Antonio River, protecting that part of town, and made up of mainly Germans that lived in that section. And it was called the Ben Milam, or Ben Milam Fire Company Number 1. Our second volunteer fire company, and that one, the first one was in 1854, the second one came soon after that, was Alamo Association Number 2, and that one was actually on the east side of the river, and it was housed behind the Menger Hotel. William Menger, who owned the Menger Hotel and actually opened and operated it, in 1859, the oldest hotel this side of the Mississippi that's still in use. He was the foreman or the fire chief of that company, and it served well up until the Civil War. When the Civil War came, both companies had to almost close shop, and because most men here in San Antonio, 15 years or above, had to join the Confederacy. So firefighting actually was done in San Antonio during that period by slaves. They did have a Confederate officer that was in charge of those two companies. And there was actually, the two companies were number 3 and number 4, using the equipment that was already there. After the Civil War, we did expand, and we had up to 8 companies at one time. Number 3 and 4 continued to exist by slaves, run by slaves, but now they were freedmen, and under the Freedmen's Bureau, they continued to run. They had been trained in firefighting, so they continued to serve the citizens of San Antonio. And there is some writings of where they helped Alamo Association No. 2 at a fire at the Alamo, believe it or not. There was a fire at the Alamo, and the two black companies did help out there at that fire. We continued with the volunteer fire companies up until 1891. Most of the volunteer firefighters, you know, were merchants and bankers and gunsmiths, tailors, folks that were of some means in town. And when firefighting happened then, it took the whole town. But you had people leading the group, which was the fire companies. So by 1891, we had 6 companies. The two black fire companies had been decommissioned or had been dissolved. Some political issues happened now. We don't know. They did ask the city for some money, and the two, number 3 and number 4, were disbanded in 1888. But in 1891, a gentleman by the name of Brian Callahan was running for mayor, and he's the one that proposed that we create a paid professional fire department. And if he was elected, that was one of his issues, that he would disband the volunteers. They were still in force, and they were running firefighting, but the town was getting a little too big, and volunteers sometimes were not able to handle the types of fires that were happening. I mean, they did a good job, but you have to come from your ranch or from your home. It's a little tough. So Brian Callahan does win. He wins the election, and he disbands them in 1891 and forms the San Antonio Fire Department. We now have 53 stations and about 1,700 to 1,800 men and women that run the San Antonio Fire Department. So from those beginnings under Brian Callahan, or Mayor Brian Callahan, who was a rather progressive mayor, did a lot for parks also. So now we have those 53 stations. So we've continued to work. However, back then when you did get hired on, you spent 30 days at the firehouse. So most of these guys were young and single. You did get a little bit of time every day to go home or do whatever you had to do. But like I said, most of them probably lived at the firehouse. It was a 24-hour job every day. So it continued to build up, and we had a pretty good working fire department with some pretty good equipment, and we've continued through the years. Our first steamers were purchased under the volunteer fire companies. I know we had up to 5 steamers at one time. These were horse-drawn steam engines.
So the fire department had horses then too?
Oh yeah, we had horses. The last one went out of service in 1927. We still had old number 5s, was still the steamers went out. I think that we had 3 Aaron steamers that were purchased in 1892, and those went out of service in 1910. They still stayed on as reserves. We have photos of them being pulled by a Fordham little tractor. So they were still in service as auxiliary pumps and things like that, pumping out basements and things. And it could still be used to put out fires if you needed to. But the last one was taken out of service. The horses were taken out of service in 1927 because we were completely motorized by then.
So when you come into the museum, you've got the wall of photos, and these are people from the 1800s.
Yes, these are our volunteer. This is the only pictures we have right now of the volunteer companies. If you notice this one here, you'll see this is William Minger alongside the first steamer. This is a steam engine that was purchased by him in 1869. This is after the Civil War, and you'll notice his picture. He's a rather short individual. He's only about 5 foot tall. He's almost a little bit taller than some of those wheels. This is a hand-drawn steamer. This is not a horse-drawn steamer. Volunteers would pull these halyards or these ropes that were on this reel, and then two other firefighters would steer. And this is also him up here in his fire chief. And you see his badge and his fire chief's belt and his firefighting coat and his gavel. So that is one of his meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next to him in the sepia-colored photo is the Turner Hook and Ladder Company. This is actually our first volunteer truck company. These gentlemen were members of the German Turnverein, or the gymnastic club. You know, the Germans had dancing clubs, shooting clubs, singing clubs, drinking clubs. But they had a gymnastic group, and this is the Turnverein, and it was called the Turner Hook and Ladder Crew. And you can see their axes and their ropes and their ladders. This truck was actually, this two-wheel truck was built by a carriage maker here in town to serve their purposes of reaching second floors. Not that we had a bunch of floors, but it was good for getting up on the roofs and stuff. And you notice they look quite young, even though they do have some beards. Everybody had beards back then. But that is, and then here's a photo of them actually doing their gymnastic exercises over at Bowen's Island. This is where they would treat folks to watch all the antics they could do on all these different apparatuses.
Those are the pictures, and then when people come into the Fire Museum, here are these.
The apparatuses that we have on display are, number one is this 1912, this is our oldest right now, 1912 American LaFrance hook and ladder truck. This is actually from a little town called Comfort, Texas, about 40 miles from here. It's never been touched. This is exactly what the original paint, the original wheels, everything. And you see the buckets hanging on. These are the leather volunteer bucket brigade buckets. And this is what was used to put out the fires. Back then, every household in Texas was supposed to have a bucket. So when you had a fire, everybody would bring their buckets. And you form one line, bring in the water to dump it, and then the other line was to send it back to get some more water. On the right, we have a 1927 American LaFrance. This is the first apparatus we actually restored. It is given to us. It was in really bad shape. What helped with the restoration of this is we published a book back in 2000, and most of the proceeds that we made from that book went into this apparatus. Now, we were lucky enough that after, it was a static display, and almost toward the end of the restoration, we had some gentlemen, friends of firefighters, and some firefighters that belonged to the group. One individual, Alan Cunningham, a retired paramedic, said, we'll put an engine in it, because the original engine had been blown on and it wasn't working. So we were going to use this as a static display, but he said, bring it over here and we'll put an engine in. So they did. They put a 1979 Ford inline six with an automatic transmission. You can't tell. But we keep it under 25 miles an hour, and she only works parades or a little festivals downtown. The fire chief rides up there and rings that bell while somebody also cranked this siren. If you'd like to hear the siren.
That's a big attraction, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, we're trying limit the amount of bell as many times that the bell is rung, because after a while it gets to you. Next to the American LaFrance is a 1951 Mack, and this thing is immaculate. It runs well. We use it for parades also. The chief rides up there, or other folks ride it. We use it during Christmas too. We take some of our folks around downtown. It's really in good shape, and we really enjoy it. And we had, San Antonio had Macks from the 1930s up until the late 50s. We had American LaFrances from the late 1800s up until the 1980s. So American LaFrance was a company that was around for a long, long time.
Then you've got a third truck over here?
This one is quite an oddity. People ask about it because they had never seen one like this. This is actually, the fire service, before they had aerials, had service trucks. Or even during the aerial period, we still built service trucks. This one was actually not purchased, it was built by the San Antonio Fire Department mechanics here in 1939 on a 1939 Diamond T chassis. It's rather unique because there's no other one like it. Folks that do restoration or fire buffs always wonder what in the heck is this thing. But we received it back from Live Oak. Apparently Live Oak had purchased this years ago from San Antonio, we think. And they were using it as a parade vehicle for many, many years. And they called us several months back and said, do you want your old Diamond T? And we were surprised that it still exists. Some of the guys didn't even know it did. I was lucky to see this, and in fact, I even drove it a couple of times. Back in 1968, she was still a reserve over at number 10s, and we would pick it up. I think on two occasions we picked her up and used it. It was kind of scary, but it worked and ran okay.
And then over there you've got?
We have a 1981 American LaFrance. That was probably the last of the LaFrances that we had. It's a century cab. It's got that round cab that American LaFrance was known for, that front the front face of it. It's a shame. Those were really good apparatuses. They did go out of business several years back after all the over 100 years that they were in business. And it's been left in that horrible slime green that we had for about 20 years, that people thought that color was more visible at night. Turns out it really wasn't. What is visible at night is the reflective striping and the red lights, and of course your air horn. No bells anymore, but we had the air horn and the reflective striping.
Now, I see you still got the fire poles. You left them in place.
We left, all fire poles are still here.
But
you can't climb them. You can't slide them.
Don't touch, yeah.
That's it. And if we ever open up upstairs, we're going to have to seal them up. We'll probably put some plexiglass over the poles so people can look down, but they won't be able to.
And then, okay, so over here, you've got...
This is kind of our... This is our water display. And I think I point out things to people that visit San Antonio. You know, San Antonio is celebrating its 300th anniversary next year. Our tricentennial is going to be celebrated the whole year. Now, we were founded in 1718 by Spain. When the Spanish arrived here, one of the first things they did was found Mission San Antonio de Valero, which later became the Alamo. But one of the things you needed to do if you were going to grow crops is you had to irrigate your crops. So what did they do? They started digging what's called acequias, or irrigation ditches. In 1718, the first acequia was dug off of the San Pedro Creek, almost right at the head of the springs, and it ran for about 2 miles, irrigating the properties between the San Pedro and the San Antonio River it dumped back into. This picture is an example of an acequia that was still in use in 1942 over by the missions, and you notice the two people using the acequia on a little makeshift wood bridge. These were hand dug by Native Americans here under the, I guess, auspices of the Franciscan friars. And they continued to be used up into the early 1900s. We still use the acequias here. So firefighting was very lucky in San Antonio. We had plenty of water. By 1776, San Antonio had over 50 miles of acequias, beginning up about 3 miles from where we're standing at the headwaters of the San Antonio River. All the way from up there, all the way down south, almost another 10 or 12 miles to the missions. So there was plenty of water downtown, in front of the Alamo, behind the Alamo, by the cathedral, up and down various streets. Everybody had water, so it was easy for firefighting purpose. The other, big thing that happened in San Antonio as far as water was the water mains. We got our first water mains in the 1800s also. Our first hydrants came in 1877. This is actually an example of our first water mains. They were made of wood, hence the idea where we call hydrants fire plugs. Because when you wanted to draw water, this is before we had hydrants, you had wood water mains. So people would dig down at a fire close to it where the water mains was supposed to be. You dig down to water and you'd punch a hole in the wood main. But when you were finished, after the fire, you'd have to plug it, so you'd get a wood plug and you'd plug it. And that's why we still call fire hydrants fire plugs, mainly because of the plug. Now this leather hose here, fire departments or the fire service used leather hose up until 1870 when cotton jacket hose. It's a copper riveted leather hose. They were quite heavy, quite bulky, and once wet, they were even heavier. But they worked. The copper rivet, this type of hose was developed by two firemen in Philadelphia back in the 1800s, and they really worked well for that period up until cotton jacket. The bad problem of it is once you used them, you brought them back to the station, you roll them out, you dry them, and then you have to coat them with fish oil, which pretty much stunk up the station for the next 30 days.
And then you've also got some of the early fire extinguishers.
Yeah, these are some of the extinguishing agents that were used back then. Some of it is actually quite poisonous. These fire home bombs, they call them, or these extinguishers, they're just glass globes filled with carbon tetrachloride or salt water. Now, if you had the salt water one, you'd be okay if you threw it at your stove or something and was burning. But if you had the carbon tetrachloride one, you could poison yourself. It is quite dangerous. Soda and acid, carbon tetrachloride. Some of these even had a fusible link. These would be mounted above a stove or something, and if it got too hot, that fusible link would melt, and that spring-loaded little trigger would pop and pop a hole in the glass, and it would throw the water down or the extinguishing agent into it. The soda and acid extinguishers that you see, this brass one here, these are quite fancy and pretty, but they're also outlawed. They're quite dangerous if for some reason it doesn't, once you turn it over and the mixture begins to expand and pressurize, if there's something wrong with the hose or the nozzle, it can explode and be quite. In fact, we had one firefighter kill the captain, killed in line of duty because of a faulty extinguisher at a small fire.
Wow. And then real quickly, because we're running out of time, what about the rest of the displays? And then you've got another building,
sure,
too.
Well, this is kind of a display of day-to-day life at a firehouse. That we can't take people upstairs, so we did it here, and we have a makeshift pole with a firefighter sliding. We have a bed with a firefighter taking his or asleep at night with his boots and his bunker gear right alongside. This gentleman with the white hair is the chief. Almost all our old firehouses had a roll top desk. These old desks are still being used by some of the chiefs at the fire stations, and an old phone that somebody found us. A collection of badges from Willie Hartman is there too. The old stove, we would use them at the firehouses as heaters in the bays, and this one came from number 9.
And then you got the other building.
Next door we have the old fire department shops, where we have actually an apparatus where children can climb on, and we have many actual real bunker gear that was given to us by one of the bunker gear companies. And we also have an ambulance, and we also have adult bunker gear. The adults can also dress up like firefighters in helmets and stuff and take all the pictures they want. We have another apparatus, a 1955 Seagraves that used to run out of either number 27s or number 20s. They both had the same type of apparatus. And we recently acquired a EMS unit so people can climb in and look what it feels like inside an ambulance without being sick.
And what do you want people to get from the fire museum when they come here?
You know, I think there's two things. I think we're also stressing safety, because on the other side we do have an area for children and for adults, and it's called the Danger House. Since we couldn't do a smokehouse here or a safe house, we did the opposite. We're showing actually all the bad things that you would see at your house. So we're asking folks to come and look and see if they can find them. Then we have a book where they can actually look into the book and see if they found all the dangerous objects. For the children, we have one interactive station that we hope to upgrade, and we have some puzzles and also some other stuff. We have a little theater that talks about various things also in the fire service. What I really would like for people to leave with was how long this type of work has been, you know, being done here in San Antonio and throughout the country. How it is dangerous, but it's also probably one of the last of the romantic professions. How much is entailed, how it's come along through the years, and just to learn that if you didn't know the difference between an engine company and a truck company, well, maybe when you leave here, you'll know the difference then, and how to be safe too.
Retired San Antonio firefighter Hector Cardenas is the curator and a docent at the San Antonio Fire Museum, run by retired firefighters and other volunteers. The museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can get more information at their website, sanantoniofiremuseum.org. Thanks for listening this morning. I'm Chrissy Mernon.